This edition of Commodity Week was recorded at 4:30 p.m. Central, Friday, February the 29th.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Welcome to Commodity Week. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Terry Rogensack of the Hightower Report. Our panelists today are Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson Group out of West Bend, Wisconsin, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. In a few moments, we'll take up these topics. The nearby soybeans gained a dollar for a week, and the crop insurance numbers are in.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's start the program with this question, Paul Cooley. What was the most important event that took place this week, and was it in Chicago, Minneapolis, or someplace else around the globe?
Well, I think the thing that was the scariest deal was when we found out that some rogue trader put forth, you know, did $142 million worth of damage to Mann Financial, and we don't condone it. It created violent transactions and moves in the wheat market, and we hope things be back to normal. But those type of things are scary. And when you see the trading range that day in that one particular contract of $2.42, it does underscore the volatility of the marketplace.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Well, I'd have to agree with Paul. I think that and that we finally got trading wheat along the way, with the volatility added in by that big mistake and something that should have been caught by regulators that wasn't. But I do think that getting things back online here and finally some deliveries happening on Friday and getting back to normal will be good for next week.
And Jackie Bakes.
Well, I think probably I don't disagree with the wheat part of it, but I think the new contract ties in crude oil and the new contract lows in the U.S. dollar certainly are big things for the week. You know, from the standpoint that oil, of course, drives the bean demand for bean oil, and it continues to drive the demand for acres. And the lower U.S. dollar certainly shores up the fact that we're going to get continuing strong export demand.
Let's follow up on that with the soybeans. The March this week had a high of $15.24. They're low at $14.23.5. March rallied $1.02 this week at $15.22 for the settlement price. New contract highs, of course, made there. November beans at $14.26, up 35.5 cents. The last time, Jackie, you were on the program, you said $16 beans were in the realm. You still agree with yourself?
Oh, yes. No question about it. I think when you look at that, when you look at the fact that we have an inverted market in the beans, it just says to me that traders still aren't comfortable that we've got all the acres that we want, and they want to make sure that all of this old crop that we're hanging on to, which we've already got in our hands, there's lots and lots of demand for that. So I don't see any reason why we're not going to go higher.
Do you have a differing opinion, Paul, about where the market might be headed at this point, or what the fundamentals might be in the process?
Well, there's no doubt about it that the corn, soybeans, and wheat definitely have an enormous amount of strength in the marketplace. My take is that we're still, after the Ag Forum in Washington, are readjusting acres and things to a great deal. Our general impression is that when the dust settles, we still need somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 to 8 million more acres of cultivation in the U.S. this coming year. The marketplace is counting on, obviously, and the people in Washington, excellent weather around the world in order to get us through this production.
Well, how do they divide that 3 to 8 million extra acres up? What do you think?
Well, I think the marketplace is pretty clever on how it will get those acres. And, you know, the big acreage would come from CRP. the big factor here is that probably those CRP acres would go to wheat or possibly soybeans or oilseeds. And as a result of that, we would see the change of the ratios between corn and soybeans, and it would encourage more corn planted and more productive areas and allow beans to be planted on the non-productive acres like in the CRP.
Okay. Well, Wayne Nelson, Paul says they'll come out of the CRP, but Ed Schaefer and USDA say, no, we're not going to do that.
It doesn't look like the government will be releasing extra CRP acres as of right now for planting. As we talk, Todd, you know, we would hope that they maybe would, but it does look very doubtful and it doesn't seem right close on the horizon. We are hearing more and more people calling different seed dealers, different fertilizer dealers every day asking, what if I need some more seed beans? I've talked to a lot of our larger customers, and they're telling me the 5 to 10,000 acre farmers are telling me they've got 1,000 acres in limbo. They've got it ready to go, either corn or beans, and they haven't decided yet. But if prices are leaning towards beans, that extra 1,000 acres is going to go to beans.
Jack, you think Washington will step in someplace? And I've got a couple of ideas on what could happen. Paul seems to think CRP might step into the process. What if the administrator of US EPA says, hey, we need to roll back, and she's got the power to do it on the mandates for ethanol?
So are you asking me if I think the CRP acres are coming out or if the EPA is going to come in?
I'm asking you, what are the scenarios that might break the market?
Well, there's certainly no doubt that the EPA has the power, but we also have to remember she's got to take a six-month period for any kind of questioning. And so she can't just come in and make the change, bang, just like that. So there's a six-month period in there that they have to go and put out questions to the public. When it comes to the acres, what I'm hearing from a lot of people across is that we're losing a lot of pasture land acres. We're also losing alfalfa acres. You know, when you looked at the Outlook meeting, they already had 6 million more acres in there than what we planted for last year. And so I thought it was a relatively bullish report, especially considering that February Outlook meeting that the USDA puts out usually is the most positive for the most acres they're going to plant, the best yields they're going to get, and also the lowest demand that they expect. And so, you know, when you looked at that, they came in with a 1.2 million billion bushel carryout on corn, when in reality, if we don't pick up more acres or if we get lower yield, we could be below a billion. And so I personally don't think that CRP is going to do us a lot of good at this point in time. You could see them release them in the fall. But, you know, in general, most guys are not too thrilled about having to go out and work up a lot of land that doesn't have any good organic value in it.
Well, let's talk about that 90 million acre corn number that came out in the Ag Forum. I think it was Jackie, you said that you thought that was the highest number maybe. Maybe some have said that. I've heard that a couple of places, that that's the highest number they think they'll see this year. Do you think that's the case?
Well, you know, if it follows through, and, you know, USDA is pretty much stuck in their ways, perhaps. But in most cases, that is exactly where it is. When they come out with their February outlook, that outlook is usually the largest number that they expect for the year.
Okay. Well, you know, the American farmer is very creative. And what we don't want to really have, the bottom line here in the country, is we don't want export or production levels to leave the U.S. You know, in the 1960s and 70s, we were always dead set against the set-aside because it encouraged production to leave the United States. The same argument can be true in 2008 and 2009. We just basically want to have a very healthy agricultural industry. We understand that there's a lot of people in certain value-added processing facilities. What we're afraid of is that can we really stand in the U.S. prices of corn $6 to $8 a bushel? Can we stand soybeans $15 to $20 a bushel? And can we stand not to have full production of ethanol to take care of our energy needs? I think the bottom line here is that it's be safer to get some of these acres back into production instead of just worrying about and encouraging production to go somewhere else in the world.
So your fear is that export demand and even the livestock industry could suffer because of $6 to $8 corn, and if we lose those two, that they won't come back.
And the bottom line is that anyone that is short the marketplace here, both for corn or new crop soybean sales or new crop wheat sales or even new crop corn sales, the simple arithmetic is the marketplace needs 6 to 8 million acres or the prices are going to be extremely strong. Any type of weather problem, any time it's surprise demand or a weather problem somewhere in the world. And this is the bottom line that concerns us, that in some of the people like that we read and talk to in the industry, is that we wonder if the USDA is actually factoring all these unknowns into the marketplace.
So Paul says bring the CRP acres in.
Gradually.
Gradually, and make sure that we hold on to our export and our livestock. And what do you say about $6 to $8 corn? Will that put enough pressure on that marketplace that it would hurt it so bad that it wouldn't come back?
As far as the livestock side, the livestock sector? The livestock sector certainly is going to be under a lot of pressure, and they are right now. You know, it depends upon how active they've been at being able to cover their input costs. But one of the things in the livestock sector, I think, that's overlooked sometimes is, you know, for years when our American dollar was stronger than the Canadian dollar, we went up there, we bought their feeder cattle, we bought their corn, we slaughtered cattle up there. They're here in the U.S. doing exactly the same thing.
Well, I guess here's the question. Maybe any of the three of you can jump in on it. Paul seems to believe that CRP acres is the right thing to do in order to make sure that prices stabilize. Let's put it that way. What are the other alternatives? What are the other options that might be in place? Or do we need to do anything else other than to let the market work as it is at this point?
Todd, I'm not sure the market is working as it is at this point in time. We're way too heavily influenced by the index funds. They own over twice the wheat harvest for the whole U.S. on the board. We're seeing $1.50 to $2 basis levels in wheat. We need to get back to some sort of reality with better delivery points and what's going on, number one. Number two, you know, we need to lower the – they aren't going to do it, but they should lower the position limits that the funds can hold because they're pushing the commercials around and it's not good. We've got a lot of elevators that are probably in trouble because of the hedge requirements, the way this market has run away when all they're doing is good business practices. You know, as far as buying acres, well, you know, we're going to take acres away from cotton. We're going to take acres away from probably rice. We're going to take acres away from pasture. We're going to plow up some stuff that hasn't been plowed up for a long time because it is economically feasible to do this. As we said one of the times, last times around the show, it said that the market could bear corn on the good ground, and it was still better there to produce corn, and on the marginal ground, it was still better beans. And I think we're going to see a lot of double crop acre beans on anything south Route 70.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't disagree with that at all. I think when you when you look at the big picture, and you look at where everything is going to come from, I think what it comes down to is whether or not we have good weather. You know, if we have good weather, we've got the ability to make major yields in a lot of this planting and with the type of acreage that we've got. But the whole thing comes down to whether the weather's good across the world.
And Todd, one thing I would like to throw in here is everybody I have asked in the crop insurance stuff because of the BYE endorsement, which is going to amount to $5 to $6 an acre on insurance, I says, well, are you going to plant triple stack? I haven't got anybody that is not going to be eligible for this. They are all planning the good triple stack numbers. So, you know, we could look for a little, you know, a 4 to 5% increase because of that.
Right. Except for the fact that the BYE is only in four states. That's the only thing that's, you know, if it was across the U.S. for everybody, then I think that we could really see a big increase.
Well, it's in four states, but it's in four of the five top producing states.
Right.
The only one it's not in is number three, Nebraska. So it's in Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, and Indiana for right. the BYE. We've got some numbers to get through very quickly. March wheat this week, 13.34 and a half on the Heim. The low at 10.51, a settlement price up 23 and a half at $10.73. July, $10 even, up 13 and a half cents. March corn for the week, 5.47 and three quarters the top. The bottom at 5.13 and a quarter. And a settlement price at 5.46. They were up 23 and three quarters. And December corn futures, 564.75. The settlement price there up 14.5 cents. March oats at 422 were up 38 for the week. From the Mercantile Exchange, live cattle February contract at 93.90 top, a bottom at 92, and a settlement price up 97.5 cents at 92.97.5. The March feeders at 103.65 up 27.5 cents. Lean hog futures, April contract 62.45, the high, the low at 59.60. And a settlement price down 355 at 59.95. 1 minute before we go to the break and the weather forecast, best advice at this time as we go into the month of March.
Well, I think right now what a person needs to do is put strategies in place.
Sit on your hands. It looks like things are going to get better.
I think I'd stay very optimistic in prices right now, Todd, until we see some major move by the government.
And one final comment as we head into the weather segment here, just for a couple of minutes, and then we'll talk with Terry Rogensack after the break. The numbers are in for the month of February. This is the way they finished up. You'll be working with a bean number for your crop insurance at $13.36 1/4. That's $13.36 1/4, and a corn number at $5.39 1/2. $5.39 1/2 for your crop insurance numbers. You're listening to the Commodity Week program. You can see more at willag.org. That's willag.org.
I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Winter continues to drag on with temperatures last week running 10 degrees below average. Overall, February has been 5 degrees below average. Precipitation last week was widespread throughout Illinois, although the amounts were generally less than an inch of liquid water. Most of this precipitation fell as snow, with amounts ranging from 2 inches in southern and western Illinois to over 6 inches in northeastern and west central Illinois. Ogden, just east of Champaign-Urbana, reported 8.6 inches of snow. Several sites along the Illinois-Wisconsin border have winter snowfall totals in excess of 60 inches. Antioch right now is the front runner with 69.2 inches. Because of the saturated and largely frozen soils, plus a large snowpack sitting in Wisconsin, the National Weather Service has declared that much of northern and central Illinois is in an area of increased chance of minor and moderate flooding this spring. The National Weather Service forecast calls for warmer and wetter conditions this week. Temperatures will rise into the 40s and 50s over the weekend, with chances of significant rain on Sunday and Monday, especially in the southern half of the state. Then it should turn drier and slightly cooler for the rest of the week. For the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign, I'm Jim Angel.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to Commodity Week. Our panelists in studio are Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson Group of West Bend, Wisconsin, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of WILL AM 580. That's public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Our guest on the phone lines this afternoon, Terry Rogensack of the Hightower Report. Good afternoon to you, Terry.
Glad to be on the line today.
And tell me what you made of most of our discussion up front and how you see alternatives, if they are needed, in order to keep the prices stable for corn, soybeans, and wheat.
I think in general, the USDA Outlook Conference numbers were mostly supportive to the market. And like your panelists pointed out, I think there's a important thing to look at. If we just plug in a six-year average yield for soybeans, we end up with 37 million bushel carryout and basically no beans at all in the U.S. And we plug in a six-year average for corn with all the numbers that they put out, we end up with 462 million bushel carryout, 3.5% stocks to usage, and virtually no corn or beans And again, that's just a simple six-year average.
Hey, Terry, one of the questions I guess I'd like to ask you is, you know, when you look at the impact or the effect the American dollar has on the demand side of things in the grains, where do you see the American dollar going, let's say, in the next 6 to 12 months?
We still see a negative bias on the dollar, and the breakout in the dollar this week was followed very quickly by new all-time highs in crude oil and gold, in soybean oil and soybeans. And that had a very significant impact on our markets in the U.S.
Terry, the one thing that we keep hearing time after time, and of course, if you've sold anything, you've sold too much at this point in time, of farmers that have sold something they consider either too many bushels or at too cheap a price. At this point in time, would you recommend any repurchasing, any calls, anything like that?
Boy, looking at the return per acre for both corn and beans, it's an unbelievable return, and I would just strongly suggest buying at the money puts in both beans and in corn. Looks like a lot of money, but it's not as big of a percentage of the price as it would be if you're looking at 275 corn or 750 beans. And then if the producer wants to wait for higher prices, wait and then sell a farther out of the money call, I think that can work in both corn and beans.
Terry, when you look at these higher prices here, will we see, you know, we understand that there is a wonderful crop of soybeans coming on board in Argentina and Brazil. Will we see any price hiccup will this encourage a 6 to 8% increase in acreage down there this coming year?
I've seen a lot of stories that, you know, given the change in the currency and fertilizer and all the other kind of stories you hear, that they're not going to expand that much. And they really didn't expand that much in the last year, but certainly with the price levels we're seeing now, they're going to see some major significant expansion down there.
Terry, have you been following the price of nitrogen? I've heard as much as $1,000 to be booked for fall potentially, or that's what their thoughts are, and that maybe $750 might not be a bad place to go ahead and book it now. What do you think the future of nitrogen prices might be?
It's a very confusing question to someone like me who's been following the natural gas, which was beat up to the pulp in the last 6 months and is finally coming on. Now, certainly, you know, with the natural gas price coming up, you can rationalize raising those fertilizer prices further, but I think they've got locked in some pretty high profit margins already, and I guess I wouldn't be, you know, unless natural gas keeps on going, I guess I wouldn't be that concerned, but certainly try to lock in the inputs and the price in any way that you can. So I can't argue with that when you're looking at $650 acre on corn profitability. I mean, I think you need to be looking at all kinds of strategies that can help you lock in at least pricing windows.
Terry, the Chinese have been very aggressive buyers soybeans and soybean oil, palm oil, and of course in those commodities. What's your take as far as, do you think there's still lots more? What's your idea? Are they going to go on and run this market up a couple of bucks in here? Get the bean oil past 70. What's your hunch here? I mean, is there a lot left, or is the glass still about half empty, so to speak?
I think we're getting close to them getting their needs filled. The palm oil, one of the reasons palm oil went up and made an all-time high today was because of its discount to the soybean oil. So that's not a good sign for the soybean oil. Soybean oil up at an all-time high again today. Some disturbing comments, I think, coming up, even out of Fed Reserve Chairman Bernanke, commenting that he favors cutting high tariffs on imports of Brazil ethanol. So, I mean, I think you've got factors like that. my partner looking at a matrix in soybean oil, looking up saying he only needs $200 crude oil to break even on biodiesel production at this level. So certainly we can see some problems coming up in here in the soybean oil area. Once China's done buying.
Terry, when you look at, I did a little figuring talking about crude oil today and looked at the American dollar, you know, and the EU currency, you know, and $102.80 crude oil was at $49.80 in the EU. And, you know, we're constantly hearing about world recession. What's your opinion as far as OPEC maybe trying to take and disassociate itself with the U.S. dollar?
I don't have a strong opinion there.
Oh, sorry about that.
I just, you know, I saw a thing about gasoline prices, $6.50 a gallon in all around Europe, and coming down a little bit from there into the U.S. And getting cheaper when you go to the Southern Hemisphere. But certainly, I guess I don't know how that would have a major impact on the world economy switching over to the European currency.
Are you concerned at all about the ethanol industry in the United States?
Yes. With the comments like that from the Fed chairman, with the pressure that we could see on the ethanol industry being blamed for high food prices. And so the political pressure could go either way into the coming year, but I think given the high food prices, a lot of the talk about let's solve global warming right now and let's get, you know, biodiesel and ethanol into every engine we can right away, I think we're going to see some backpedaling in that area.
Terry, you know, we all agree that we're going to see more acres here in the U.S., but tell us, what's your breakdown on the corn and bean acres, your best guess, as of today, February 29th?
I think we're going to find the acres to get them pushed up. And I guess I was a little surprised that the corn acreage number was so high from the USDA, and I think if we can get it up to 90 million acres, I think that'll be I don't know if we'll be able to make it that high, and I think the bean number is probably going to go up a little bit from here because we'll find places to find it and push it up a little bit.
Terry, we thank you for taking your time today.
Okay.
Terry Rogensack is with the Hightower Report. Now, a final word from our panelist in studio. We'll start with you, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Well, Todd, we've seen a lot of excitement this week over a dollar raise in beans. We got some tremendous crop insurance prices to guarantee some income to farmers. But it's still a very volatile world out there. And as we talked here today, the government and what they might decide on all of these things can change a lot of things. So as Terry said, maybe consider some of what we consider expensive puts.
Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson Group.
Well, my whole drive that I was going to talk about was make sure you cover yourself with puts. And you can always roll them to a higher level. Hang on to the cash for right now.
And Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services.
A tip of the hat for WIL's Outlook meeting this coming week. It's going to be a tremendous success, I know, and everybody should come to the meeting. And also tip of the hat to the good news from Dick Weller this week.
Thank you much. That's Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services reminding you to visit us on the website at willag.org to find out all about our Outlook meeting. It's at the Beef House. That's on Tuesday of this coming week. $13 is all the charge, and that's actually for the meal. Should be a great day. Lots of good folks will be on hand with us, including all of our panelists, along with Dan Bossi of Ag Resource and Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises. Be sure to check that out on our website at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.